Hello and welcome to this week's Football Fans Podcast, the final pod of the season. We were meant to do a pod last week, but for various reasons, equipment, studio and guest-wise, didn't all quite come together. But we're going to do the final pod of the season today. And I've got with me G, our Chelsea fan. What are you saying, G?
I'm good, man. Season's ended a few weeks back. We had a little bit of a friendly last week, Wednesday, that we took care of.
We'll get there.
I'm all good, George. Just waiting to see what happens in the summer, you know? Ins and outs, transfers, all that kind of stuff. Okay. Managers might be bouncing, so, but I'm sure we'll get onto all of
we
that.
We will. I think it's going to be a busy one. We've only got you today, G. We might have
Well,
you know, I mean, the listeners might be wondering, like, what is this? It's like an interview. No, it's just one-to-one. But we might have some other phone guests.
I'm sure this is what the listeners want.
Well, you never know. Let us know out there if you want more of just G by himself on the pod. You know where to get in touch with us on our socials. But yeah, we might have some guests on the phone throughout the pod as well. So we're gonna go through what's been happening over the last two or three weeks.
Yep.
And at the end of this, we will also go into a very brief summarizing of the season as a whole. All right, so where do you want to start? Should we start with the most recent final, or should we go back and then work our way up to? Let's start with the most recent final.
Yeah, the big one,
the real final. The yeah. Big one. Liverpool 2-0 winners over Tottenham to claim their sixth Champions League or / European Cup. Wasn't the best game. In fact, it was a very crap game.
Yeah,
it was a crap game. Let's be real.
The streaker was the problem.
It was the best bit, the best entertainment in the whole game. Do you feel like, first of all, who are you rooting for? Because I know there's a London rivalry with you and Spurs, but also I know you despise Liverpool too. So going into the game, who were you rooting for?
It really was terrible. I remember I was actually going to America at the time that Tottenham were playing Ajax, and we landed, and Ajax were up. Got checked first thing I did, check on my phone. What's the score? Got back to the hotel and then turned on the TV. And literally within 5 minutes, Moura had scored the goal that had taken them through.
The winning one.
And I just knew my holiday wasn't going to be a good holiday.
It just ruined it.
To answer your question, as you know, I hate Tottenham. No Chelsea fan's going to want Tottenham to win anything. So, but man, they've already started with the six times and the big parade and all this and blah, blah, blah. So, the Tottenham was definitely the lesser of two really, really, really bad evils. But you know what? I mean, like, taking rivalries aside, like, you know, it pains to say it, but they both kind of deserve what they got. It's not luck, you know, like in 2005 when Liverpool won the Champions League, they were lucky. Ghost goals, crap team. They actually were lucky, but this time you can't even. You kind of have to squint and just say yeah.
So let's go backwards now. Let's kind of go because I wanted to do a preview of the show. So many of the questions that I kind of have prepared aren't really relevant, but a couple still are. Going into that final, who for you, G, do you feel needed to win that game more out of Poch and Klopp?
Yeah, this is going to be disrespectful. Tottenham fans are going to like this, but I would say Klopp, because Liverpool, unlike Tottenham, have to win trophies to be seen as a success. Mm. I see even, you know, retrospectively now, you see a lot of Tottenham fans saying, oh, well, you know, it's great that we got to a final. Or maybe not so much fans, but the pundits, they say, look at this great.
No.
Pochettino's having a great season anyway, you know, getting them to the final. I was listening to TalkSport on the way in, and they were saying, like, you know, Man City should have been there, Juve, all of these guys spend more money, blah, blah, blah. But you were going to say anyway?
No, so on your point of the fans, this is something that, I mean, Ollie disagrees with this and he hates when I ask him this question, but I wonder if there's something in it. I actually did also hear a lot of Spurs fans leading up to the final talking this kind of self-pity talk of, you know, I remember hearing on the Friday on the radio a couple of Spurs fans talk, we're still getting another getting another Ajax. We can't believe we're here. This doesn't happen to Spurs fans. We just can't believe it. Because I think they were talking of to Spurs fans that just arrived into Madrid at that point. Yeah. And I thought to myself, I wonder how much the mentality and the energy and the... what's the word? And the just the vibe that football fans of a club engender actually transmits to the team. Ollie says it's nonsense just because a bunch of Spurs fans are pessimists. That has no bearing on what Harry Kane and Lloris. And maybe he's right, but just the vibe was going into it was, we can't believe we're here and we're almost happy to be here. And do you feel that kind of that has a vibe or energy that transmits to the team?
I think expectation runs through the club, and I think, you know, you could say on, you know, I mean, I get what Ali's saying in terms of, well, negative fans aren't going to make you not perform. But where do the fans get their negativity from? They get it from the vibes that come out. I saw Lloris did an interview after the game and he was like, let's be honest, Spurs are not going to be a team that's going to be competing for the Champions League every year. And I was like, wow, like, I mean, I know you're disappointed, but you're the captain, you know what I mean? You got to put a brave face on it. You got to say...
Or just lie.
Yeah.
Even if you believe that, you don't come out and say that.
And that it's that kind of, you know, some City fans say same old City. And like, you know, people talk about arrogant fans and, you know, people often say Man United, Liverpool to a certain extent as well, depending on who you speak to, Chelsea as well. But like... when we go to finals, we expect to win.
Invariably, you do win.
And you expect to win. And maybe that expectation to win pushes, you know, I think, like I said, I think it doesn't just come from the fans. It comes from the entire club. And I think Spurs will have to change that mindset if they're going to start winning trophies. On the other hand, you can't, I mean, it's been like 11 years since they've won one Rumbelows Cup. Maybe they've just been burnt.
maybe. I just thought to myself, come on, man. I think we'll all acknowledge that going into the game, Liverpool were the favourites.
Yeah.
But even Spurs fans would admit that. Cool. But I just thought, just puff out your chest a little bit more. Yeah. Like,
I mean, you beat City. I'm sure City were the favourites when you beat
exactly.
City.
Exactly. Yeah, anyway, I just found that interesting that their attitude going into the game was such.
Yeah, so as such, Poch will be under less pressure because no one expects anything of Tottenham. That's just...
Indeed. Do you feel playing Kane... was starting Kane, sure, it was the correct decision from Poch? Did you get that right?
It doesn't look like it. He hasn't played well.
Pre-game, would you have picked him from the start?
Well, that's the thing. 70% of me says yes. I would have picked him. He's, you know, he scored 90 goals over 3 seasons. You know, and goals are the rare commodity, you know, that you need. So I probably would have picked him. I think there was something in it that. I don't know. Klopp at Firmino, for instance. I mean, Firmino and Kane are not the same in terms of goals, but they're both the point man for that team. But when Klopp realised Firmino wasn't working, he just took him off after an hour and bought Origi, who eventually got the goal. And I just wonder, it was clearly not working what Tottenham were doing. Maybe you could say after an hour you take off Kane, you say, look, you know, it doesn't look as if you're dropping him or anything like that. You could say, well, I tried in an hour, you know what I mean, his fitness wasn't good enough. You can make any excuse, and you can go back to that formation which was so successful against City and just see how it goes, because it looked like Tottenham could have played for 3 games and never scored there. And I just think maybe they should have tried something different, but I'm not so mad at him just trying it, even though it didn't work.
I agree. I've seen a lot of people battering Poch for that decision, and I wouldn't have started him. I said that pre-game. But I think it was a lose-lose for Kane. Sorry, for Poch, if they didn't win, because it clearly didn't work, him starting him. But if he hadn't started him and Spurs lost 2-0, people would be saying, well, how do you go into a Champions League final without your best player?
Yeah, exactly. So if he's fit enough to be on the bench,
exactly. You can't win. So yeah. I'm not going to batter him too much for that. Where I will batter him for, I agree, is maybe not recognising earlier that it wasn't working. And I think maybe he kind of bought into, you know, Harry Kane FC, in the sense that when it was 0-0, it was that if we get one chance, I want it to fall to Harry Kane. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I thought if that we'll get one chance, but it wasn't really coming. Rather than waiting for that one chance, he could have done what Klopp done and been proactive and changed things to make that chance.
But this is not the first time that we've seen
1-0. Sorry, it was 1-0.
Yeah, this is not the first time that we've seen that crucial parts of the season, Harry Kane. Whether it's due to fatigue or just playing, it just seems like, you know, England, not in the World Cup, but there was the Euros. I think it was the one just after they had lost the title race.
Yeah.
And in the run-up to the title race, he wasn't that great either. He scored less goals, and then he went into the Euros and didn't do so well. I think Poch has seen this before. And sometimes, if I say that's the one mistake I have about, you know, the top managers at top clubs, they make that mistake once and then they do something. Whether it's the manager gets sacked or the manager makes a change, something happens. And I just think Poch is sometimes allow one or two mistakes more than he should be. Because he's done so well, and because, you know, we're Tottenham, we don't expect anything, but it kind of just stops him from getting across the line to glory.
Yeah, no, I hear that. Do you feel... I pre-game, I changed my mind at the last minute, literally the day. All week and all month, I've been rooting for... I wanted Liverpool to win the final.
Yeah.
Because I just didn't want to hear first team in North London to win the European Cup. I just thought it would have been really, really... bad for Arsenal.
Yeah.
But you know what, G? On the day of the final, I changed my mind. I actually thought, I want Spurs to win this final. And I'll tell you why.
That's risky, Jordan.
It was. But the reason why was because two reasons. One, because I think if Spurs had won the Champions League, it would have been a very, very obvious lesson to not only my team, Arsenal, but I think some other big teams as well, in that you don't have to spend £90 million on a midfielder and blow silly money to win, to gain success. Appoint the right manager, good coaching and patience, and you can achieve success. And I think Spurs winning the Champions League would have epitomised that. It would have been a model that I think other teams should have and could have learned from. Now, they still can.
Yeah.
They lost, but I think if they'd have won it would have been like, wow, Spurs is a 5-year project. They've had some embarrassments in that time and they've missed out on some key titles on key moments. But the culmination was a Champions League title. So that was the reason why I was looking at it kind of more than just putting rivalries to one side.
Yeah.
Arsenal and Spurs are not in the same league at the moment. We're just not. So there's no point trying to, you know, have that fight. So I just thought, you know what? Let me put my Arsenal hat down and look at the bigger picture and what can Arsenal learn from Spurs, as much as it hurts to say that. I think United, another thing that can learn from Spurs, appointing the right man, good coaching, and patience.
Yeah. No, I think you make a good point. The only thing that I would say, and I guess maybe you'd say, well, typical Chelsea fan we're the exact opposite, is that you get a Spurs, if they would won the Champions League, or maybe if Ajax would be another good example. I would have liked Ajax for the same reasons that you had mentioned. But you get a Leicester, but you get an Atletico Madrid, just for example. And let's go spend their money, but not in the same league as their competitors. But it's very rarely sustained. You get a Dortmund, you know, and usually what happens is the vultures come, they take their players. So, yeah, it can work. But where is it working over a sustained period of time? It's showing at the moment in football that money is talking. The teams who are spending the most are finishing in the same positions. And I think, I don't know, as much as I think we'd all like to see an organic, youthful team with a youthful manager with great coaching, I think certain teams do need to get with the times. That doesn't mean do the Man United throw money at it and just fail. It means, you know, measured spending, but still spending at the same time. I think that is the most, has to be the method.
So do you
forward.
Not think that if Spurs had won the Champions League final, they would have, Levy would have given Spurs the Poch, you know, not Man United money, but enough money to be able to say, okay, we're going to tie down, first of all, our big stars. Mm. And secondly, we're going to actually go and then get Dortmund's best player or Ajax's best player without spending £100 million on one player. Do you not feel that they would have been able to use that Champions League win with some money to make sure it was sustainable?
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if he would have just went back for Jack Grealish again. because I just think Levy looks at it straight. There's a budget. No matter what else is happening in the market, we got to stick with the budget. The stadium's just open. There's probably all the delays and things like that. I mean, they didn't, you know, it doesn't mean that much to us, but I can imagine that's costing Spurs money behind the scenes. They just need to make that money back. And the Champions League, winning the Champions League is not that. I mean, the finances of the Champions League are a lot based around the TV money and prize money. But the difference from the semi-final to the final, winning it just from being in the final, is not that great. So I don't think winning it, like people always say, you win the Champions League, now you got to spend £100 million. You're not going to get £100 million extra for winning it. You know what I mean?
but it might help in terms of sponsors. So yeah, with your sponsors and your partners, you can get an extra 10 mil from them, an extra 10 mil from them, an extra 15 mil from them, because you're now the European champions. So yeah, you might not get a big pot of money for winning the Champions League per se, but in the summer, Levy can then go to, I don't know who's chief sponsor, was it AXA? Whoever their sponsor are. He can say, right, yeah, before, you know, you were giving us over 4 years, I don't know, 250 mil. Okay, now we want 300 mil. Do you know what I mean? Whoever their kit sponsor is, you were giving us 50 mil. Now we want, do you know what I mean? So they might have been able to bump up.
It gives you a certain level of gravitas. And what it does do is open, you know, I was in Miami at the time, and people knew who Tottenham were. I know it might be surprising, but people were like, wow, that Tottenham game. But they hear the English accent and say, oh yeah, that Tottenham game last night, really good game, wasn't it, blah blah blah. I guess Uber driver's looking for a conversation point. But at the end of the day, people are actually, it was getting Tottenham's name out there.
Yeah.
So in that sense, it obviously gravitas, but it doesn't, what I guess what I'm saying is, if it only happens once, like kind of Lloris has kind of indicated in his interview,
it's not gonna help.
Yeah. Yeah. It has to be sustained year after year.
It's finally on Spurs. Where do you think this leaves Spurs and Poch? Because obviously they're in a, you know, they lost the final, but they're in a good position still in terms of they've got to their first ever final. Okay, they didn't turn up, but the rumours are that your manager will be nabbed by Juventus. Their plan B, I believe, they're looking at is possibly Poch. I think Simone at Lazio is in the mix as well. Yeah. Poch is on their list as well. I really think that Poch winning the Champions League actually would have meant he left. So I think losing it actually has worked in Spurs' favour in a weird way. You know, Eriksen, I'm told today, by my sources, is pretty much, it's like a done deal that he's going to Madrid. Ali is not kicked on. I can see if they get a big offering for Ali, do you see him stay? Where do you think the next year, 18 months lies for Spurs?
But they are at a crossroads. I remember speaking to Ollie and him saying he thought it was time for the team to break up. I mean, he ultimately said he thought it was time for the team to break up when he thinking that Man City would not have had Champions League. But he might be at a point. You make a point about Ali. He looks a shell of the player that you thought he would kick on to be. And you know, with Eriksen going, yeah, they are on a cross. But then I don't want to catastrophize. I mean, and a lot of people do this with Chelsea, and I'm like, and I just like roll my eyes. Like, it's not in the world. But, you know, new managers come in, new players come in. Teams always come back. Good teams always come back. I hope Tottenham aren't in that category. but there's always a way.
Life beyond Ali and Eriksen.
Absolutely. And even Poch.
And if those players go, they'll get good money for those players.
Some of the players
I'm seeing them linked with are really good players as well. Yeah. And even having not won the Champions League, I would argue that getting to the final, there still could be a draw.
Yeah, Do you know what I mean? Absolutely. I think Tottenham, Ajax have really kind of put their names up. I mean, Ajax always was a big
name. Yeah, they were
No disrespect. But then at the same time, they haven't been for a while. Yeah. And I think it was what they have shown, and hopefully because, you know, a lot of the bigger teams, quote-unquote bigger teams, or the teams with more finances, are stockpiling players. Hopefully players look at a Tottenham, at Ajax, and say, that's somewhere I can go and make myself.
Yeah, no, I hear that. Before we go into Liverpool, I just want to mention, I was in Chicago last week, and it was really obvious, not obvious, but it was very clear that soccer is growing in America. Yeah. I mean, a lot of the bars and places I went to that had TVs and were showing sports, they were advertising both finals, both European finals. The Champions League final and the Europa League final.
Thank you.
That might be because it was for quite well-known sports clubs.
Yeah.
I mean, if the Europa League final was, I don't know, PSV versus Schalke, maybe they wouldn't have been a big deal of it. But they were really promoting it hard. And I spoke to a lot of people speaking to me about, because they heard my accent, they're like, oh yeah, soccer, yeah, it's getting big, blah, blah. And again, back to your Uber point, I spoke to an Uber driver about this, and he was saying, like, yeah, soccer right here is getting, it's definitely growing. It would never be as big as the three big sports, you know, basketball, baseball, and NFL, the main sport. But he was saying to me, it's definitely going to, you know, it could be the next biggest sport, overtaking possibly hockey. And I said to him, why do you think that is? And he made an interesting point to me. He said to me, what he's doing now, because he said he had kids, what's happening now is a lot of parents are directing their kids away from NFL and into soccer because of the injury scares.
Yeah,
there's a lot of obvious and public data and analysis out there that talks about
the concussion injury.
Yeah. And a lot of parents, he was saying now, when they're at school, when their kids are at school, they're directing their kids now to football. Now, you can't earn the money that you can earn in NFL out there. But he was just saying that it's just so obvious that the dangers with NFL are there. Why would you direct your children to a sport that's quite clearly got red flags in terms of long term? Now, I don't know if, I don't know the stats behind how many people end up with concussion. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
But he was saying to me, a lot of people like him who have kids, he said that football you can do from five, whereas NFL you can't.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? So I find that quite interesting. That he says in two generations from now is what he believes will make soccer a massive sport. They've got the amount of the population to make it a big sport.
Yep.
They've got the money to make it a big sport. Women's soccer is bigger than men's soccer.
So
girls are big into football. Do you know what I mean? So yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if in 10, 15 years' time, because America have got the World Cup after next.
Yeah, they have. Yeah.
So by that World Cup, they're not going to win it, but they could be a. They could be a. They could.
Yeah,
be
you don't
a,
need to win
force.
It. To, you don't need to win it to have
make an impression.
To make an impression and momentum. Yeah. Exactly.
So I just thought that was quite interesting. That, you know, in 10 years, 15 years time, it could be big out there.
And they love the Premier League. They love the Champions League. Like, some of them were like, I would have watched Salt Lake City.
I'll stay up for Arsenal Chelsea though.
Exactly that. And that was it. It's like, oh, the Champions League is so great, blah, blah, blah. And in the era where, like, there have been times over the last 18 months where by my own admission, like, I've gone to football out of routine rather than enjoyment. A lot of that's down to sorry ball. But generally speaking, they still love the game in a way that I guess maybe because it's a new toy to them.
Yeah.
But they still love the game in a way that maybe even some people over here don't. And I think in that sense, it's only bound to get bigger.
Nah, for real. Okay, Liverpool now. Let's start with Klopp, because he's finally, you know, got his trophy in this country. I wonder if a lot of people have kind of noticed or remember that he lost his assistant 2 seasons ago now.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
The one they called The Brain. And a lot of people were saying at the time, I remember, that, you know, he won't fall off a cliff, but this could impact, you know, his progression with the team, because it was really that guy that was doing a lot of the work and he was the real brain behind the operation. It got to 2 Champions League finals in 2 years, a title challenge where they've got 97 points and lost only one game, and the second year won the Champions League. Is he now putting himself in that, like, is he officially now an elite manager alongside the likes of Pep Guardiola,
and that's it.
I was struggling.
Yeah, you were speaking of Jose, though. No.
Is he Pep aside the best manager out there now?
You know, honestly, I kind of always thought he was. I thought what he did at Dortmund was so impressive, but then I guess you can be that, there's always that risk of it being that one club thing where everything kind of falls in line. I think the thing that's impressive about it is, like, I never saw Mane look like a decent, good Premier League player. I think now he looks like a world beater.
I remember the time, I was saying that I thought 34 million was way too much for him at the time.
Yeah, you always do.
I do, but I was like, that's way too much. But anyway.
Well, do you remember Man United were actually linked with Mane at the same time?
And they pulled out.
And a lot of United fans that's what at the time laughed it off. Like, why would we go for Mane? But now, like, Mane looks the real deal. Salah looks the real deal. And it's one of those things. I don't even think, like, I always say, like, with comparing Salah and Hazard, Salah's not in Hazard class, but at the same time, he gets the output that Hazard gets. And I've put that down to good coaching, good management, and instruction and setup, which is suited to the players that he got, which I think are not quite world-class players, just off world class, but they're so motivated and they're so determined because they're not those big names. They really have the attitude and the hunger as well. He's done so well. And so, yeah, in answer to your question, yeah, you could only really say Pep out there ahead of him. And dare I say it, as he pointed out in his press conference, Pep hasn't got to a final in quite a few years.
It's true. This is true, yeah. I remember wanting him at Arsenal, and it was mad. He's doing well. The final itself, it's ironic that they played actually decent football last year and they lost, and this year they were so bad and won it. I was in Liverpool yesterday for the parade. I was working up there, and I shouldn't say this, but I'm going to just say it anyway. I was just so blown away, G, with how the Liverpool fans. Okay, so we laugh at Liverpool fans a lot because they say this thing about, like, you know, they're on the side of their team bus, it's going, "This means more," and that's their slogan. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And we kind of laugh at them for a lot of, you know, thinking they're superior to every other kind of football fan. But I wonder, I just wonder if there is something unique about that club and the fan base and the city. Because, first of all, the sheer number. So I was there. There was almost a million people came out for the parade.
Yeah, 750.
That's a lot of people. Secondly, it's not just the numbers of people. It's like, from I got on the train at Euston, and they're loud and they love it. And you get there, then Liverpool's live street's on fire, and it's just it was so overwhelming. Then you walk into the bit where the parade was. And you get the sense that the whole city, obviously bar Everton fans, but the whole city, Liverpool Football Club it's their thing. And again, with the Anfield Nights Under the Lights thing, again, we mock that.
Yeah.
But there must be something in that, because it's no coincidence that on those nights, on those nights in Europe, there's something that no other stadium or no other team seems to be able to kind of galvanise. And I think there's a lot to be said about those fans. Am I just being a bit hype? No, a bit hyperbole.
No, I mean, I hate to admit it, but you do have a point. That wouldn't happen with any of the London teams.
Definitely. And even United, mate, would a million people come out into Manchester? Liverpool is, and that's the Champions League. They won it five times.
Yeah.
Imagine if they won the Premier League.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
But I think, you know, Liverpool kind of, socially, like traditionally, they've, you know, their hardships that people from the area have been through have always kind of banded them together. They have this weird rivalry with Everton where they hate each other, but they don't hate each other, if you know what I mean. Like when if a problem comes around, they've always got each other's back.
Yeah, it's really,
it's really strange. It's the only other, I haven't been to Anfield for Champions League night. I must admit, whenever I've been to Anfield, personally, the atmosphere has been disappointing.
Okay.
But I think hearing it, the Champions League nights on TV is like where they boo every pass you make, and they, you know, and even them, and I know people will say it's negative, but even what they did on the bus to the city bus last year, you know what? It's bad.
Scumbags. But
it worked.
It worked.
It got the result.
Yeah.
My only comparable experience was Champions League final when I went to Bayern. But obviously Champions League final was in their city.
Yeah.
But I had the same kind of feeling that you did. I got off the coach. It was 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yep.
People were chanting Bayern.
Yep.
I went into McDonald's. They had Bayern t-shirts on.
Yeah.
It's that kind of real.
The whole city is like taking over. About their football club.
And you could never get, there's certain parts of the world geographically or even the UK, you just wouldn't get that in London.
And I was thinking about this on the way back, on the train back last night. It was a mission getting back, but about doing some kind of show that looks at, and you mentioned London earlier, when I was in amongst the Liverpool fans there working, and I was first of all jealous. I was like, my team is miles off achieving anything like this. But even if we did win the Champions League, I'm not confident a million Arsenal fans come out they might, but I just thought to myself, is there something in the whole 1/2 club city thing? I mean, Newcastle's another club that they clearly live and breathe their football club. Now, some may say that's because they ain't got nothing else to do. They ain't got a life. You know what I mean, so football's their life. It is their life. From a very,
I think it would
age.
Happen in Newcastle as well.
It possibly would.
Yeah,
but in like an Arsenal and Chelsea and other clubs, I just wonder if they would ever garner that sort of that madness.
It's like when going to FA Cup finals. Like, it's sad to say, but I'm a bit spoiled. And then the amount of times I've gone to Wembley, it's still an event, but it's not the same as it would. So I usually get there 20 minutes before kickoff because I know the queues go down towards the end. I just head up the escalator, get there in time to see our bide with me. But there are people who get there from 8 o'clock in the morning and camp out.
Gee.
Nowhere to sit. It's
crazy. Arrived at, I think it was about midday. The bus didn't leave where it was leaving until I think it was like 4:30. And there were people camped there. Now, maybe people think I'm going to go over the top a little bit. Maybe I am. But I just thought to myself, would any other group of football fans be so invested in their team as Liverpoolians are? I don't know. Maybe I just was really taken away by, like, they love their team.
It's almost
it's life for them.
It's strange to say, because it's almost a, you could say, a quote unquote cultural thing.
Yeah.
Even though we're in the same
culture. I think it is. With Liverpool now. Do you feel, I was asking Liverpool fans, I was interviewing a few fans, and I asked them, if you could swap the Premier League for the Champions League, would you? And the vast majority, I think all but maybe two, said no.
There's something about the Champions League, you know?
I asked that as well, and they couldn't answer. I said to them, what is it about you guys and the European Cup? And they were like, oh, we don't know. No one can answer it.
Yeah.
But do you feel next year they have what it takes to come first in the league?
They have what it takes. And this is why I always say, you know, so I said a bit earlier about not catastrophizing, because I remember going back to 2004 to 2006, I thought we would win the league for 10 years straight and no one would get close. But something always happens. An injury pops up, you know, motivation goes down, you know, a player goes AWOL. Something always happens that changes the dynamics slightly, and you never know. The only thing that Liverpool have to be wary about is that their dynamics will eventually change as well too, and they would need to feel, they need to get that over the line before something happens where that team starts to break up or a key player wants to go to Madrid or something like that. But I think they've got where it takes to compete. I don't think any Liverpool fan could be downbeat after the season that they've had. I mean, at this stage, you'd put them second favourites behind City. But who knows? Transfer window's open. Who knows what will happen?
Indeed. All right, well done to Liverpool and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's got it over and done with.
We're going to be talking later on in the show about what's happening in Spain with the three big boys. There's going to be a lot of action happening transfer-wise, ins and outs across Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid and Barcelona. And we'll be getting Ben Hayward, our regular football Spanish expert, to be talking us and taking us through what's happening, what we can expect. We'll get to that. Before I get to our next bit, we've gone old school. So we're recording this podcast back in my flat, and we've not done it for about 18 months. 18 months, I think, since we've been back here. So if the quality sounds even better than the studio, then that's the reason why. I've got snacks. I actually bought some crisps for you. I'll get them out in a minute.
All for the gram.
I'll get them in a bit. Right, so before we get to Arsenal-Chelsea, that the Europa League final, we'll whiz through that one. And then we'll do a roundup of the season, just a very quick roundup. Something I wanted to kind of touch on that we were speaking about, one of our WhatsApp groups, that I think is worth just briefly touching upon. It's the whole issue of there was a journalist, Rob Harris, he works for PA, Press Association. He, in the post-match press conference when Manchester City had won the FA Cup,
just finishing the treble,
he asked Pep Guardiola about the investigation that's ongoing, that's looking into payments being made to their managers off the books, I believe it is. And this kind of also comes in the kind of shadow of FFP issue that potentially could be arising for the club with some irregular and potentially illegal spending as well. And there was a lot of uproar about the fact that Rob asked this question. Now, I know Rob. he's a colleague of mine, and a lot of people were a bit upset. Pep was fuming.
Yeah, you could tell.
He wasn't happy at all that he was being asked this question straight after the game. And I was one of the few people that defended Rob asking that question. You didn't think it was appropriate. You thought it was out of order.
Yeah.
Just before I put you right, tell me why you thought it was out of order.
Well, George, have you spoken to anyone outside of your profession who thinks it was a fair question?
No.
Yeah, and I think this is I think this is the thing. There is this kind of journalist union which you're a part of, and you know, I respect your admiration for for what you do, but it seems as if like a lot of journalists ask these questions and say, oh yeah, but we have to, we're doing it for you, but no one, the man on the street doesn't want you to do it. The man on the street, you know, I'm not, you know, like, to be honest with you, it didn't cross my mind, that whole story in the FA Cup. All I thought was Watford got spanked. But even if it did, like, he's not going to tell you the truth there, is he?
So is your issue with it the question asked or the timing of the question being asked?
What I'm saying is, I don't have a problem per se. What I'm saying is, if it's one of those things, like, he asked a question for clickbait, for me, nothing more than that. To get his paper or to get himself publicised. So Pep has the right to respond to it in the way he would. Let's not pretend he did it for the average person, because I don't think the average person was baiting, oh yeah, please go up and ask Pep about this. I don't think that's the case.
See, I think the reason why I defend his right to ask the question, I think it was a legitimate question. It was A, legitimate, because it was the week that there were further allegations and an investigation, I believe, being launched into City's irregular spending, I think transfer-wise, and this popped up only about 3 or 4 days earlier as part of that allegation.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if it was true that Roberto Mancini did get a side payment aside from his salary as a manager there, I then think it is a legitimate question to ask Pep Guardiola. Now, I understand why the average football fan thinks that it was bang out of order. They've just won the treble. He's just won at Wembley.
Mm-hmm.
Great moment for him professionally and personally.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very uncomfortable and, as he saw it, a very offensive question to be asked.
Yeah, 100%.
I understand why he was outraged. I have no problem with Pep being outraged. I have a problem with people saying he shouldn't have asked the question. The question for me was legitimate. He was doing his job. And then people then say, oh, well, why did he ask it then? That was the wrong time to ask the question. So my question to that is, when does he ask the question?
When is
he meant to ask the question?
George, the reality is there probably isn't a good time to ask the question. You know what? He's in that profession, and I guess he has to do what he has to do to get notoriety, to get clicked.
I take issue with that. I don't think it's about him getting notoriety. Because I don't know if people are aware, but he works for Press Associations. They're not a paper. They're there to kind of, he's more of an investigative journalist. So he's not like a daily news journalist. He was all over FIFA when they were doing their scandal. He was heavily involved in the sexual abuse of football players he's more on those stories. In some ways, a little bit more close to where I, in Channel 4 News, when we cover sports, we're not really interested in hamstrings and transfer fees.
Yeah.
We're interested in more the newsy elements of things.
Okay.
So his remit isn't to ask, you know, how does it feel, Pep, to win the treble? He knows the Daily Mirror will do that.
Yeah.
The Sun will do that. That's football questions.
Okay.
His job is to ask the questions that bleed into news. So his remit is a bit different. So that's why he asked that question. He wasn't looking for notoriety. His boss and his job would have been to ask, it's a legitimate question.
But Joe, do you think there would have been a straight answer to that question?
No. I agree with you. Pep was never going to say, we just won the treble, but you know what? You're right. You're totally right. There has been this going on. I totally agree with that. But just because you can probably preempt the answer, that doesn't mean you don't ask the question.
And that I guess maybe that's where we have to agree to disagree. If I know you're not going to answer in a million years, why do I ask you? Just to antagonize you?
No, because our journalist's job is to ask the questions. Now, how Pep, and if Pep answers it, that's on Pep. Pep's got the right to answer it how he wants to, wants to. But as a journalist, I'm not doing my job if I don't at least answer the question. Pep could have just blanked him And that's Pep's prerogative. But as a journalist, we have to ask the question. Conversely, there are some questions that journalists ask that infuriate me, because onto your point, this is where there's a slight inconsistency in what I'm saying. There are some questions that I hear reporters asking where I'm like, you just wasted the question there. For example, Pep, it's one of the greatest achievements in your career. Well, yeah, I've won a treble in England. That's a dumb question. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? We all know he's not going to say no. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So there are some times when you have to, as a journalist, be quite savvy and be quite... You don't get a lot of opportunities to ask questions in those press conferences. You might get one, maybe two.
Yeah.
So you have to use them once. So when people ask those sort of questions, I'm like, that's a dumb question. We know he's going to say yes. Yeah. But I don't think this was a dumb... I think this was a necessary question that Pep was maybe rightly fairly outraged by. But I think we can't not ask questions because we know the answer.
But necessary for who, Jord? For him and his career?
If he's got sources, or if he's got evidence that suggests that there's some wrongdoing going on, then he's thinking of the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. If the story breaks in 6 months' time that Man City were paying Pep Guardiola off the books, then people will be saying, well, why wasn't no one onto that 6 months ago?
I wouldn't.
You wouldn't care if Pep was getting...
No. I wouldn't care that journalists hadn't asked him the question, no. I'd want to know why FIFA and UEFA went onto it, or the authorities went onto it, or the FA went onto it.
No, but we all bash the authorities for being corrupt and backwards anyway, so to expect them to kind of come down on it is a bit weird in itself.
Yeah, but...
You just hit the press.
No, I must admit, I don't like this feeling that the press kind of sometimes come across as if like they're the people's champions. They're people who are going to uphold justice in the public interest. I don't, because there's enough dodgy things that happens in the press as well that you're probably aware of.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Fair. I just wanted to make that point because a lot of people didn't understand why I was on Twitter and I was arguing with a few people and defending him, and a lot of people were like, it was out of order. And I'm like, no. It wasn't out of order. Like I said, Pep is entitled to be outraged and offended by it and cuss him, swear at him, blank him. Yeah. That is totally what I think Rob probably expected and what was probably... That's fine.
But to not ask
the question, I think would have been wrong.
If a traffic warden puts a ticket on your window, that's their job and they've got to do that. So I can't be mad at someone for doing their job. I just don't like...
That's fine then. I understand that then. But you wouldn't say that he shouldn't do his job for fear of offending someone.
No. He should, if that's what his job is, and whether it's to clickbait or to investigate, that's cool. But please don't come and tell me you're doing it for my benefit, because you're not.
You're not having it. All right, cool. Let's move on. Let's now talk about the Europa League final, which in comparison to the Champions League final actually wasn't too bad now, looking back on it. At least there were a few goals in that game. Chelsea 4, Arsenal 1.
You were very confident, weren't you, Jord?
I was very, very confident. I was very confident. I was very confident. so much so that I bet someone that we would.
Yeah, and there's no cameraman here or anything like that. So
that was deliberate. and it wasn't even like one of those ones where I was saying to you before we started recording. It wasn't like it was like a boat. Like you and Akin does this as well. Like you always just like, just back your team regardless, even if the evidence or the form suggests you probably will lose.
It's that arrogance we were talking about earlier.
Maybe it must be. We're going to win every game. It's like, you're not going to win every game. This was genuine. I looked at it. Looked at both teams' form, looked at both teams' motivations, and I genuinely came to the conclusion, Arsenal hat aside, that Arsenal would win this game. and then kick-off game.
Look at your face.
So go on then, what did you make of the final? What did you make of it?
Yeah, overall not the best of games. Decent second half. I actually think for the first 25-30 minutes, I was really disappointed with our approach. Arsenal ended up being a little bit toothless, but we just didn't really play at all. But it seems to have been something that Sarri has done in certain big games, kind of, I guess, recognising that with the team that age that we are, we can't go held for Lever for 90 minutes. So it seems to be, he did it in against Frankfurt, did the same thing against City in the cup final, where just before half time we kind of turn it up a little bit. Or I don't know, maybe I'm giving him too much credit, and maybe that's just the way the game panned out. But second half we came out and yeah, we had a purpose, we had vision, and Arsenal just really had no answer and just really crumbled. It was really to say it was pathetic in terms of how non-competitive it was. In all honesty, like, we could have scored more. I guess Arsenal say they could have scored a couple as well. And I don't think we were barely out of second gear. And it, yeah, it just, but the thing is, you know how I felt. I think, like, don't get me wrong, I enjoyed beating you guys. And lifting the trophy. But after waking up on Saturday morning, and there was all these things about, and you know, about the build up to the Champions League final, it just made me feel what that, this Wednesday was just a waste of time. You know what I mean? But yeah, I think you know, not a bad way to end the season. Looks like Hazard's last game, so, and that, it was a bit sad to kind of, you know, see him on camera. I know, you know, we have debates about in our group about affinity towards football players, or whether you should. I'm one of the people who openly admit I do have affinity, and you know, Hazard is one of the guys who I have, because, you know, for a guy of his ability, you know, I mean, and it's funny because I've always criticised him for playing within himself and not having that arrogance and that ego and stepping up. But on the other side of it, if he did have that, maybe he wouldn't have been so loyal as he was to us. He's from the first games that he played, Man City in the Charity Shield, I remember him getting kicked up. But he got kicked up at Wigan, never complains, gets on with it, total professional. And really, like, I looked at some of his stats, kind of like, you know, no outfield, no, only people who scored since he's been here that scored more goals or contributed to more goals and assists are strikers. Like, his stats aren't as bad as people sometimes make out in terms of his output as well. Like, I think he was the third highest for assists, I think, only behind, like, David Silva and maybe it was Eriksen, I can't remember. And you really think David Silva is playing in a team where the striker scores goals year in, year out. So credit to Eden, man, and no hard feelings. I really hope he does well at Madrid if he goes there.
Are you surprised that it's reported Chelsea are going to get 110 million for him, considering he's in his last year's contract?
Yes and no. It's happening more now that clubs are kind of like, okay, don't pay the money, we'll keep him. We've seen it with, you know, Arsenal. I mean, you know, with Sanchez and things, and that worked out beautifully for Arsenal. Looking at it now. So, yeah, I just think, well, like, bearing in mind that we can't buy anyone anyway, like, why should we not? You know, and I think it's just good negotiation. And it's not something that we've always been thinking, but, you know, we have to do it.
If you get 100 plus mil for Hazard, I think you've smashed it. I think Madrid, if they're smart, they play the long game, stretch this out. I don't understand why they're paying anything more than 70 mil.
But here is the thing.
Serious.
Hazard's not going to do a Tebow.
No, he's not. But he's made it obvious he wants to go. So that devalues, that brings that value down straight away. Last year his contract. And it's the club where he wants to go that's interested in. I just think all those things should make the bargaining power should leave it in Real's hands.
But what's the difference between making the Champions League and not making it in terms of finance? Like 60, 70 million?
Something like that, yeah.
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 It's worth keeping Hazard for that.
You think?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I agree. I don't think he will down tools if it's his final year. His motivation, I think, will maybe drop, but I don't think his professionalism will drop. Final thing on Hazard. Do you remember about 6 months ago on the pod, I did a drive-by, I think it was with you, and I was with somebody, and I said, Eden Hazard is 50% of Chelsea's attack. And you gave me a sideways look like, why are you asking these dumb questions for, Jordan? And it's been proven as far as I'm since that I was right. He was literally half of your attack. Take him out of your attack. I think we had a game against you and it was leading up to it. And I was saying, if we stop Hazard, you stop half of their attack. Because the other half is William, Pedro and Giroud, or whoever was up front at the time. I think it was Morata actually at the time.
Yeah.
But do you concede now that he was half of your attack?
Yeah, I mean, he is as I mean, the thing is, I probably side-eyed you because you were probably just popping shots. And that's
I blatantly was. Yeah, but there was some truth in that as well, though.
there is some truth in it. He has been, like, he is our talisman. But I think he's more than that.
Yeah. I think, you know, Aguero's their talisman. We've all got a talisman. I think he literally was 50% of your chance of scoring a goal.
But then, you know... It's one of those things. I think unless it's like Man City or Barcelona, you'll find them more and more. I mean, Tottenham, Harry Kane.
Yeah, but at least he's a striker. At least he's a forward. So you kind of, if your main forward is like half of your attack, that's not great. Yeah. But it's kind of like, you know, whereas to have your wide winger.
But you know, he was more of a. But fair enough. You know what I mean. But at the same time, like again, we talked about earlier and catastrophizing. Like, you know, Pulisic's coming in. Callum should be back at some point towards the end. Like, I'm not as downbeat as some people are about it. I think it.
I think it's a good thing, G. I think you've got seven years. He's been there.
Yeah.
I think you've got 7 years out of him. And I inferred it, I think, on one of the last couple of pods. I think there comes to a time when you have to realise, have we got the best out of this person at this club? Yeah. He may go on to Madrid the next 2 years and score 50, 60 goals. But is he going to do that at Chelsea? Or have you squeezed every last bit out of him? And no. I think Fergie was, I've mentioned on that pod, was the best person for me at recognising, you're not done as a player, but I think you're done here. Do you know what I mean? I think we've got the best out of you.
Sometimes you just need to move on. Yeah, and obviously my big regret, and I'd say it's a combination of like choosing wrong managers at wrong times and some of the transfers. But my biggest regret is that we never gave him the platform to do, because it would have been like, imagine Ballon d'Or winner at Chelsea, and we starved him off that platform, and that's my only thing about it. Like I wish, because it's kind of when in 2012 when we won the Champions League, I was so delighted that the Drogba's, the Lampard's, because all the years they were that semi-final, and they finally got to win it. I just wish we could have gave Eden some of those experiences, and it's kind of like almost like we hit the mountain. Bought Eden, and it's kind of been a gradual slip ever since then.
Yeah,
and he's kind of bore that slip on his shoulders. Agreed. And that, that's my only regret. But apart from that, like, credit to the guy, credit for the club for keeping him for so long. Well done for actually finding someone with that kind of mentality and ethos, and like make it, because you know, Man City and Man United were also in for him, and Man City probably could have paid him more, I imagine, but we made sure that we got him, so credit to the club for doing that. And you know, let's hope we get someone else in with that same, not with the same ability because he's a one off, but with that same mentality.
Indeed. Couple quick Chelsea one, final chance one. Do you think Sarri will be there next season?
It's looking less and less likely.
Do you want him to be there next season?
You know what, not you might call this a fancy response, but I don't want to be to either of extremes, because there's two extremes. There's this that are going around, because I've got like a few Chelsea fans, like my brother, for instance, saying Sarri did a very good job. He didn't. He did a less than adequate job and got very lucky in terms of getting to the top four, because the rest of the teams were poor. And the Europa League, like our draw... Like if you look at the rounds, we had a nice run to the final. We didn't play one good. We didn't play one good team. I was about to say we didn't play one good. Including the finalists, even Arsenal's draw. Like you had like Valencia and Napoli. Yeah, I don't know if Sarri gets through those ties.
Okay.
But he's done a less than adequate job. But at the same time, not so less than adequate that I could say you should be fired.
But calm down from where you were 6 months ago. Yeah, yeah.
But what I would say is like, I don't in the long term, I don't think it will work. So if he does go, I won't lose any tears. It might just be the best thing for all parties, but you won't see me saying, get out. I'd at least give him till next year.
Fair enough. And finally on Chelsea, I kind of saw a stat about Giroud. He's got, I think, 16 goals.
Are you trying to push your agenda?
Yeah, of course I am. That's my pod. 16 goals for club and country, and all of those goals, one touch. Respect Giroud, man. Respect him. You're not impressed.
Next question.
Respect Giroud.
Do you still respect him after that thing on the coach, the video on the coach?
Yeah, I mean, I don't, I'm not one of these fans, G, that kind of believes that when players say, because the Oxted a thing after the Liverpool game on Saturday.
Yeah, I saw that.
He was saying, oh, that one was for Arsenal, whatever. These guys just say what they want to say, and then behind the scenes, they're like, oh, Arsenal. So I don't really care about that too much. His conduct, at least in public, at least has shown respect for my football club.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So that, I suppose, is what I can really
say. Giroud is a good...
Do you respect him now more than that?
Giroud is a good pro. I mean...
He's a good pro. She's such a patronizing... That's like, that girl down the road, she's got a good personality, man. She's got a really good personality.
The thing is, he's come 2 years, two trophies. I mean, it's funny, because I always get...
And a World Cup.
That doesn't count. I always get laughed at when I said this, but like 2 years, two trophies at £15 million. That's good business.
That is good business. That is very good business. You're welcome. Have you noticed I'm trying to drag this bit out so we haven't got to go to Arsenal? So on Arsenal, let's kind of go again. Same with the Champions League final. Let's go back pre-game. There was a lot of talk, obviously, around Mkhitaryan. He refused to travel with the squad because he felt that his safety couldn't be ensured because of the political tension situation between his native Armenia and Azerbaijan, where the final was, in Baku. Do you feel more should have been done by Arsenal and possibly both clubs, Arsenal and Chelsea, to ensure his safety was there? Or if not... even goes to the extreme of boycotting the game?
I think we spoke about this offline. I wouldn't go to the extreme of boycotting the game because I think there are so many things that happen in football where people are, you know, discriminated against, or if it's their heart, it make, you know, their jobs made hard in terms of performing for various reasons, and no game has been boycotted thus far. From what I understand, you know, UEFA and both clubs were satisfied that he would be safe out there. He just didn't feel, he wasn't happy with those assurances and decided not to, which I guess is his own decision. I think overall, UEFA haven't, you know, painted themselves in a good light with the choice. If you look at the stadium, it was like loads of empty seats, dead atmosphere. It looked like a pre-season friendly, and it was just impossible. So I actually, when the tickets were released, I bought a ticket for the game, and like, so then started looking at travel options. I couldn't find anything that was under a grand. Then on the Friday, UEFA were like, we're looking at with the clubs to see some cheaper travel options. The cheaper travel option they were talking about was actually flying into Georgia, having getting the overnight train from Georgia. Jeez. But neither club would endorse that as a safe route, as in they wouldn't be able to provide stewards for it, and they couldn't confirm the safety of their stewards, and they wouldn't endorse that.
We can't guarantee you're going to be safe.
So people did that route. Okay. People got on that route. Okay. But that's how bad it is just to go to a football game. I think UEFA did terribly in terms of the choice of venue. The Europa League is much maligned in various various circles anyway. I think they brought it down even further a peg. But yeah, I don't think I'd go as far as clubs or fans should boycott a game completely. I just think hopefully next time lessons are learned about this whole thing.
So what could they do? Because just to play devil's advocate for a second, I mean, they're spouting the line of, we're trying to take the game to different parts of the world, which I think we all think is just nonsense, and we kind of see through their real reasons for doing this. But if we kind of put that to one side, you know, were they to know that it was going to be, you know, the one top Armenian player in Europe was at a club that might get to the Europa League final? I mean, you could say Arsenal, I think, at the start of the competition, were the third favourites for it, behind Chelsea first and were Inter in the Europa League.
Inter were in the Champions League. Was it
Napoli?
Napoli went down. Napoli went.
No, they dropped down.
They dropped down.
There was a team that I thought was maybe just ahead of us. But anyway.
Maybe Milan? Was it Milan?
It might have been Milan. Yeah, it might have been Milan. At the time, were seen as a possible threat. But could they have foreseen that, you know, this problem may have arisen? And, you know, if the final is in, you know, in England and the, I don't know, or in Ireland, and there's an English player that goes there, there could be tensions there politically. If the final is in Russia again and there's a Ukrainian player, I'm trying to give them a little bit of slack here. Is any what could they have done? Is basically what I'm asking.
I mean, in terms specifically with Mkhitaryan,
could they have moved it for one player?
No, you could have moved it for one player, but it was just a bad location generally. What they could do overall is you have to have, I mean, put it like this, like the Europa League final was a grand. Going to Moscow for the Champions League final was also £800. But I guess, to be fair, I paid it because of the Champions League. So maybe there is a bit of, it's not totally impossible. What I would say was done better in Moscow is that if you look at, apparently, the amount of flights to get to Baku for one day, I think their airport can take a maximum of 16,000.
Yeah, 1500.
That's crazy. Yeah, that is, you can't have a final like that. You know, in Moscow, they took your ticket as a visa for the day. So if you didn't have to go to get a Russian visa, you could just take it. And it's just those things to make things easier. That's what they could have done. I don't see what team going to Baku would have been convenient for. Apart from, because they could say, well, we don't know it's going to be English teams. Wouldn't it be any easier if it was Spanish teams? Wouldn't it be any easier if Italian teams? And those teams are the ones that are most likely
to get to a final.
So unless you've got a Turkish team who's coming out of the woodwork or something like that, which is unlikely. So, yeah, should they have changed it for one player? No. It shouldn't have been there in the first place.
I find it interesting that Five Live, BBC Five, they didn't send a crew to cover it. Now that, I don't know if they might say that was because they were making a political stance against whatever. It might have been because they just couldn't foresee a route to get to Baku. But if that's the case, I find it interesting that broadcasters now are starting to look at these sort of things and think, no, we're not going to go there. And that's where maybe UEFA might start to take note.
But that's it. And I guess for me and my friend, you know, I asked you about it. I looked at the flight plan into BLC, even to drive down from there, or even that overnight train. And I guess, you know, difficult to say, but as a fan of colour, I just didn't feel like you kind of always, it's something that we always have to be a bit more conscious about. You know, traveling into a country that's unreal. You know, if I got kidnapped, I don't know, Theresa May's come to look for me.
Yeah, for real.
You know what I mean?
Bro, you're waiting a minute. That's
what I mean. So,
waiting for a minute.
Did they just clearly thought of themselves? Clearly someone's getting a big payoff. They're not learning any lessons because they're still using Baku as a venue in the Euros. Even though it was a totally dead atmosphere. I totally agree with the principle, and it's difficult because, you know, the point that you made about taking everyone, you know, there were people who were like, when South Africa got the World Cup, there were people like, oh no, you can't take it there, blah, blah, blah. But South Africa did a good job, and I would have liked to have seen Baku do a better job, UEFA do a better job, and I must say, Chelsea do a better job, because they didn't seem to be interested in subsidizing or doing anything of above and beyond.
So this is my final point on this specific issue. A lot of the fans, Arsenal fans I spoke to, weren't placing any blame on Arsenal in terms of getting there. Forget the kind of cultural or political reasons. This is just getting there. They were like, Arsenal are sponsored by Fly Emirates.
Yeah.
If Arsenal really wanted to help their fans get there, they could have put on four or five planes. charge them, but just do it for half the price they were paid.
You could sacrifice the TV money that you'd make and make sure that your fan base. Yeah. Especially for such a low number such as 6,000. Not everyone's going to take the option as well. Some people are going to do their own thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You could definitely. And the thing is, what Arsenal did well was Arsenal made a lot of statements. Oh, we're outraged. This is terrible. Blah, blah, blah. Michael, be quiet. Did you hear a peep from them? Yeah. Apart from to respond to the criticism from fans groups.
Yeah.
So, I think... to be honest, no one's come out of it looking good.
I agree. Okay, on the game itself, let's just breeze through this. How much work do Arsenal have to do this summer? Or are Arsenal in the same place they were 12, 18 months ago?
Yeah, there's no real progress. But the staggering thing is, the league, the top six or five plus Arsenal, the other guys are really, really progressing. The league's getting harder. You know, you're going to Watford now, Palace, and
I'm not worried about Chelsea, United, and Spurs. I'm thinking, should I be worried about Wolves, Newcastle now, and Leicester?
Yeah, the reports that are coming out of Arsenal, these really modest transfer which seem to be like, I don't know, it's like, yeah, we've got 50 million to spend. Wow, okay.
They're really beating the drum. We've got 50 million to spend.
We're going
to
go for it, really go for this. You're like, yeah, City will send that on the left back. I mean, you know what I mean?
Their second choice left back.
I mean, they're going by number one the year after, you know? So it's looking tougher. Emery would have, and again, similar to Sarri in that, it's not that I think Emery is particularly bad, but getting Arsenal like in the top two or two, it's just way above his ability.
Yeah.
Like, he'd need a squad. Like, there are some managers who can literally, you know, that do a Poch or like really drag an average group of players onto glory. I'm just not convinced Emery's that guy.
And I don't think he's supposed to be. I think he was supposed to be the guy that got Arsenal back to top four. Yeah. And then when you're a top four team again, you've taken us to your ceiling, okay, then you go and get the guy that can win you the league or compete for the league. Do you know what I mean? So I don't ever think he was meant to be the long-term guy that in 6 years' time we see Emery winning the Arsenal league. On the game itself, G, I find it interesting that a lot of people, everyone was saying the second half was the pivotal half and that's where Arsenal capitulated and that's where the game was won and lost. I disagree. I actually think the first half was the more interesting half, and I'll tell you why. Because I was watching the game with my dad and I was saying to my dad, we have to score. We were on top for about half an hour of that game.
Easily.
I said, we have to score. And this is so Arsenal. It's been a problem for Arsenal about 10 years now. Lack of being ruthless. Mm. I said, we have to score when we're on top. And Arsenal are one of the worst teams at not scoring when we're on top. Yeah. We're so bad at that. And I said, if we don't score, we're going to be in trouble. And I think Arsenal and Chelsea are both characteristically so weak. This isn't the Chelsea team of Conte. It's not the Chelsea team of Jose. This is a very weak, mentally Chelsea team. I think the team that scores first wins the game.
And you know, I said this to you.
Team that scores first wins the game.
On the last pod, like if you guys had scored first, there's about five or six players on our team who would have gone missing.
Yeah.
But the fact that you didn't take advantage. You know, you got guys
still in the fight.
You got guys like Christensen stepping up. That guy has never stepped up.
I actually like him, but we made him look like a world beater.
Yeah.
It was like, whoa.
Whoa, Luiz looked like he wanted to defend.
Yeah.
It was just sometimes you can take momentum, you can take the wind out of someone's sails just by doing what you're supposed to do. But it's funny, for that 30 minutes of pressure, I look back at like the highlights. There wasn't really the biggest highlight for Arsenal was Lacazette a penalty or not? There wasn't really like that chance.
There wasn't.
And you know, even Kepa was like punching things out. He looked a bit flappy.
I was saying, put more crosses in because he's flapping,
but nothing.
Nothing. It was so disappointing. I actually disagree with your earlier point. I actually think Emery has done a decent job with Arsenal. I think Arsenal things have changed in the sense that I think he's made Arsenal better in the big games. I had a 3-point plan at the start of the season of what I want to see from Emery. One of those things was, in the big games, don't let us get battled. So I know Liverpool...
George, you're trying to set yourself up for a fall here.
Why?
Because that was your biggest game for 10 years and look what happened.
When I say big, I mean against the other big teams in the league. So like going to... Okay, I know we got smashed at Anfield and City beat us home and away.
And we beat you 4-1. It's not looking good, is it?
No. But in the league, we took 3 points off Chelsea, and the home game, we should have got at least a point. Sorry, the away game at York ground, we should have got a point, I felt. Old Trafford, we should have won that game. We got a point. Beat them at home. Spurs beat them at home, draw away, should have won that game as well. So those were not happening under Arsene Wenger. We were going to all those away games and losing, and even the home games we were losing as well. So in the big games, he improved our record slightly.
But that's it.
But that's pretty much of the three things I wanted to see that I saw. I think he's got a very, very poor team. average team. So to get Arsenal even within a sniff, okay, I know you, your team and United capitulated mid-season, but to get even Arsenal with a chance of getting top four, and I think we should have got top three in the end, but whatever, I think that deserves a small pat on the back. Because I think we're the sixth best team in the league.
You know what? No, I can't give it because of how bad Ole was at the wheel and how bad Sarabia was. The opportunity was there. Like, if you can't even take the opportunity to get top four, how will you take it when it comes to grabbing the league?
I think what happened was he weighed it up and thought, this is March. We haven't got the squad to compete for a top four spot and win the Europa League. I'm a Europa League specialist. I think he thought, I can win that Europa League. And because the games, the Brighton game, the Palace game, Leicester, I know it'd be Watford, those games we capitulated, and those are games where even one win gets us top four.
Yeah.
But I think he gambled on the Europa League. And I would say I understand why he did that. And it just backfired. Do you know what I mean? But I'll take your point that, you know, with the competition being, you know, handing Arsenal third spot and still blowing it says a lot. Let's now have a chat and a roundup with what's happening over in Spain with our regular Spanish football expert, Ben Hayward. Ben, how you doing, mate?
I'm good, Jonathan. Thank you. How about you?
Very good, mate. Very, very good, man. So before we get into any kind of transfers, ins and outs of the big three, it was a few weeks ago, well, a month or so ago now, but our first chance to kind of chat to you and catch up just very briefly on the fallout from Barcelona's defeat to Liverpool. And then subsequently, they lost their cup final, didn't they? Their domestic cup final.
It seems like, you know, Barcelona's season ended at Anfield, didn't it? Pretty much on, you know, the beginning of May. Some of the players as well, and you know, that's only exacerbated since the cup final. So yeah, we're going to the summer now with not only, you know, Real Madrid and Atletico facing, you know, difficult summers, but perhaps Barcelona facing some questions as well.
And what's happening with De Ligt? It seemed like that deal was on. Is his agent playing a money game here and trying to entice United to doing what they did with Pogba and just spending ridiculous money to make him go to the northwest of England instead?
Well, that's it. You know, Mino Raiola is notorious, isn't he, playing these kind of games. And Barcelona don't like dealing with him, but they do want De Ligt. And I think if it came down to a straight club choice, De Ligt would move to Barcelona ahead of, say, Manchester United or anywhere else. But yeah, Raiola's playing games, and if it comes down to money, Barcelona might miss out. But if it comes down to personal choice, I think we would see De Ligt coming on this season. So yeah, we'll have to see how that one plays out.
Okay, let's move to Real Madrid now. Is there in and out door going to be even more busier than Barcelona's? Who do you see getting the chop there? Because they seem to want to be bringing in some big names that are going to cost, and to do that, they're going to have to surely let go of some of their current stars.
I think there's going to be a lot of movement at Real Madrid this summer, and yeah, they're going to have to shift some players. They want to sell Gareth Bale. I think it's very likely that we'll see Isco departing this summer, maybe Marcelo as well. Keylor Navas definitely leaving. Mariano, the backup striker as well, and you know, potentially several others. So I guess they need to make some money from those to fund, you know, the deals that they want to do as well. Obviously, Hazard is the one that they expect to sign, and then after that, yeah, who knows? They're looking at so many different players. Lots of conflicting, you know, rumours and reports and information. You know, it depends who you talk to, but you know, potentially they could bring in Pogba. They've looked at Eriksen, of course. Obviously, they're keen on Mbappe and Neymar at Paris Saint-Germain, but probably neither of those two are going to be available. So, big changes ahead, definitely, at Real Madrid this summer.
With Real Madrid, Ben, is it just as much about changing the types of people and personalities at the club as well as the ability? Is it about getting a new type of player into the club? And kind of now Ronaldo's gone, you know, I know Ramos is staying, but is it about trying to bring in a different era of players and personalities as well as upping the quality?
Yeah, I think they need younger players. I think they need, obviously, you mentioned Ronaldo. They didn't replace Ronaldo, did they, the last summer, and they desperately missed his goals. So, that's a factor as well. And, you know, I suppose they need a bit more hunger as well. You know, they won all those Champions Leagues, and they probably need to bring in some players who are hungry for that kind of success, who haven't had that kind of success elsewhere. And all of those things really, just to freshen it up. I mean, some of those players probably stayed a bit too long. You know, like Isco, who I mentioned. You know, you look at him, he's only 27, 28, but he just looks like he needs a new challenge. His head's not there anymore. And yeah, Bale's had a disappointing season. So many of them have dipped. And so Zidane needs to shake it up. And bring in younger players and hungry players. And some players who can take them back to that level. It's not going to be easy, though. And obviously, they're still missing Ronaldo. So Hazard, if he comes, will have a big responsibility, definitely.
And just across the city, Atletico, Ben, tell us about what's happening with Griezmann, as what you understand. And where are Atletico at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing, isn't it? We've had a couple of Champions League finals in recent years featuring the two Madrid clubs. And now we've just had a final in Madrid with these two Madrid teams nowhere near it. And both facing rebuilding projects this summer. You know, we talked about Real Madrid. But Atletico as well, you know, they're losing Griezmann. He said that he's leaving in the summer. They're losing Lucas Hernandez, Godin, Felipe, Juan Fran. That's pretty much the whole defence. So Simeone has to replace half a team this summer. It's going to be very, very difficult. And Griezmann, we don't really know what's happening with that, because it certainly looked like he was going to Barcelona. But you know, there's some divisions now at Barcelona, and not just at boardroom level, but also in the dressing room. It seemed that some of the players don't want Griezmann to come. And that interest has gone cold. So Griezmann's now in a situation where, you know, he said that he's leaving, but actually doesn't really have a clear destination for next season. So I don't really know what's going to happen with that. There are still some people at Barcelona who want to bring him in, Bartomeu and Valverde. But if the players don't want him, I can't see him coming in. So it's definitely one to watch. Obviously, there's a few clubs, Manchester City and Paris Saint-Germain, have already ruled themselves out. You couldn't really see him staying after after all that, coming out and saying that he wants to leave. So he's got himself into a difficult situation, perhaps.
I think he's talked himself out of even going back to Atletico now. Just finally, Ben, what's been the reaction from the Spanish media and Spanish football fans towards England doing so well in both the European finals, especially one, as you mentioned, being in Madrid? Is there a fear that the English teams and its money could see them dominate Europe for the next 4 or 5 years?
I think so. I think there is that thinking. It's only one season. We'll have to see if this trend continues next season and for the next few years. It's been, Spanish teams have dominated for a long, long time. And I suppose some of it comes down to the fact that Messi and Ronaldo were dominating this era so much, weren't they, for the last decade pretty much. And now Ronaldo's gone. Messi's still there, but Barcelona, came up short. There is some thinking that maybe the Premier League, with all the financial clout that it has, could be overtaking La Liga. Although, having said that, there's quite a bit of criticism at the final itself, which obviously you would have seen wasn't the greatest game. So we'll have to see how this trend develops over the next year or two, I guess.
Indeed. Listen, Ben, have a well-earned holiday, mate, and we'll speak to you pre-season for next season.
You too, mate. Look forward to it.
Cheers, mate. Take care, man. Gee, let me just ask you, you've just heard from Ben there talking about a lot of the kind of suspected players that may or may not be moving across the two big teams in particular. Do you feel, Hazard, I think, is the guy that I think may be the first domino to fall in terms of causing a reaction for other teams making moves. Do you feel that a lot of this big talk from Madrid in particular will come to fruition?
No, I really don't. I'm not convinced that it will. Unless Madrid have suddenly come across some funds, which, there's been talk about whether, the purse strings have been loosened up a bit. That I think Madrid kind of every summer kind of come out and do something like this. Like, you know, last year it was, you know, we possibly competing for Mbappe or something like that. But then at the end of the summer,
nothing happens. But
nothing happens. All they did, they got Thibaut on the cheap. And then that was like their Galactico. That was their big name. And they might end up getting, you know, they're more than likely get up Hazard. But I don't really see them doing anything significant outside of that. Seems like Bale is dragging his feet and doesn't want to go. You could say Esco would move on, but then, you know, who's going to want, like, and he's a very good player, don't get me wrong, but, you know, if the money that they'll want to him is they're going to want money to replace someone else, you're not going to get
200 million for Isco.
You're not going to get Neymar or Mbappe with Isco money. Yeah, it's just not going to happen. So I just don't, unless they're sitting on a pot of money from somewhere, I really don't see where this big squad rebuild is going. I think it's all a bluff.
And I wonder as well, just on your point about Madrid talking the big talk, I wonder if there's a lot of Madrid and Barcelona to some degree, but Madrid more so, relying on the prestige of their name to unsettle players and thinking, we're Madrid, everyone wants to come play for us. Or we're Barca, we've got Messi, everyone wants to come play for us. But now, the money the Premier League has got is so much. Your talented player out of Ajax, or your talented player out of Dortmund, or your talented player out of Monaco or Lyon, they're like, I can get probably double what you're offering me at Man United, at Man City, at Liverpool. And if the money now is trumping even the prestige of playing for Real Madrid.
Yeah, there is a lot of what they're doing which is posturing. And to a certain extent, well, I mean, Modric took a pay cut to go from Madrid to Tottenham. I don't know whether he has a deal that increases over time.
Oh, okay.
But where at the time his wages were less than what Tottenham were offering him to say.
Okay.
And so that does happen. But at the same time, I don't see that they're not paying the number one wages. Now Ronaldo's gone, they're not guaranteed to put in the trophies every year. We'll see whether Hazard can fill that gap. Mm. But we all know Hazard is, you know, Ronaldo's a serial winner. Hazard is a nice guy. We don't know whether we don't know whether he'll have.
He's not a real gunman. He's not a killer.
Yeah, exactly.
I
don't know. I can see it being a tough couple of years for the Spanish team.
I think De Ligt is the one that's going to really tell us whether the power, I mean, the power is in the Premier League and the finances has been for a few years. But I think if De Ligt chooses United, this United, with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's manager over going to Barcelona, I think La Liga and Serie A have got massive problems in terms of trying to attract the young talent out of Europe and being gazumped by the Premier League teams.
But the thing is, all this about super agents and stuff, I just think De Ligt can't really want to go to United in the same way that I don't think Sanchez really wanted to go. And maybe De Ligt will have more to prove and he'd have a better attitude, but I just don't think I think it's a poor strategy, but from United, by just getting the gang of mercenaries in, because it's been proven so many times not to have results.
No, I agree. Okay, bringing it back, let's wrap up now. Bringing it back to England, what's been your takeaway of the season? In fact, because we've got four teams across both European finals, what's been your kind of takeaway from the English teams, home and abroad, over the season?
Oh, good question. I mean, I think, you know, we've had this often debate about cycles, that you think is nonsense. And I think there's a strong argument to say that it is starting to come back. I mean, domestically, it's funny, the league is beginning from kind of 6th down to like 10th, 11th. Like, there is starting to become a crop of teams that are effective. Not always that necessarily entertaining. Let's look at the Watford, Palace, Wolves. They actually can take points off. So it's getting harder for the top six to kind of just steamroll teams over. But in Europe, there is starting to get to a point where I think, you know, the English teams are becoming most fit. I think that Liverpool and Barcelona result was a huge result in terms of, you know, England versus Spain in that sense. The worst thing about it is I wasn't even totally shocked that Liverpool done it. And that was the only thing that made it a big shock for me was that they were missing players and they still did it. Aside from that, I kind of thought that Liverpool would have had the firepower to overturn the result like that. But even with their players missing, they still went and did that. I think that's a big symbol. Messi came out and said, like, you know, we let them run over us, or we let them bully us, or something like that. I think the tide is turning, but I don't think Real Madrid and Barca are just going to sit there and let it turn.
Yeah.
I think this will be an interesting summer, but it has been, in terms of this year, it's been a very good year for England in terms of Europe.
And I think if you throw in Bayern Munich and Juventus, they'll have... Or buying a big rebuild, but semi. I think Juventus will have a semi rebuild as well. They're going to want to come again in next year as well. And then Paris is a bit of an anomaly, but
yeah,
we'll see how they.
Well, Juventus want Sarri. I mean, and don't get me wrong. I mean, I think, you know, he obviously has a good reputation for what he's done at Napoli and stuff. But he's not. Again, he's not the serial winner. I don't know. I'm looking at it from a dressing room perspective. Do I think Ronaldo will like Sarri? I don't know. And Juventus at certain points last year, you know, I mean, if you look, you look at you know, when they came back against Atletico Madrid, set pieces, you know, just literally getting the ball quickly into Ronaldo and getting him to finish. I don't like. Will Sarri do that? Will Sarri adjust his game to try to get the best out of Ronaldo, or is he just going to play Sarri?
I think it's a good point. I think it's interesting to see how he gets his superstar to buy into his brand of football, because there's not an obvious, you know, there isn't. I mean, he's not an out-and-out target man in the way that Higuain at Napoli and I suppose Giroud/Morata was at Chelsea. So, yeah, and he's not a tippy-tappy kind of player midfielder.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, it's interesting to see how he gets the best out of Ronaldo.
Yeah, and maybe it could have been, you know, Ronaldo from 5-10 years ago could have adapted.
Yeah.
But now Ronaldo's very effective at doing what he does. Yeah. But he's not going to want to change. Out of that.
Coming back to England, I'm actually quite excited about seeing Wolves in Europe, which basically I called at the start of the season, got right. Do you want to mention that?
Yeah,
as well?
More agendas.
but I'm actually excited about seeing, because I think, unlike a lot of those kind of second bracket tier teams that get into Europe, I think Wolves might go for it.
Yeah.
I think they're going to go for it. Wolves, and I think they might hold their own.
Wolves will have a plan for it as well.
Yeah.
And I think they will get a squad that can compete.
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely see them at the group stages. I mean, I guess it depends on the draw, but I think they can. I think Fulham were the last like English team to do a really far they got to a final, didn't they?
They got to a final, yeah. Lost to Schalke or something.
Yeah, but they kind of.
I think it was Schalke, because I think Ozil played in that team, if I'm not mistaken. Could be wrong.
Anyway. I can't remember. But yeah, they kind of. I think with them, they got to a safety point in the league and switched off and focused all of it into that competition. But I think it'll be interesting to see how Wolves do with both. But I do think they're running away that it wouldn't surprise me if they did well. And by the way, you know, out of everyone who disagrees with you about your prediction about Wolves, I was not one of them. So you
keep sure?
On, you keep on bringing it back and rubbing it in my face.
Sure? I said
outside of the top six, I think Wolves can finish anywhere.
That's some fence-sitting nonsense. No. I actually said seventh. I put my nickel. I said they'll get Europe next year.
All right.
So I really was specific.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Well done, George. Do you want a medal? You know what? You can get a medal.
I get most things
after I get my £100 for them.
I sent you money. Check your account. I sent you money with a nice little message as well. I sent it weeks ago, days ago, or yesterday. So anyway, I'm also excited about Brendan Rodgers. And what he does at Leicester, because I think that I was a bit big Puel fan, as a lot of people know, not because he ran the football, but I thought he was effective. But I'm interested to see if he can maintain the place that Puel got Leicester to, but add the sexy football on top, because he's got a good team there, Rodgers. I'm also excited to see Watford as well. I think Watford may go again as well. I think they could be a team that could really spend themselves the top 10 team. I think they may try and go for a cup again, another cup run. Promotion to the Premier League. We have, who came up? Villa came up alongside Sheffield United. And who won it? Who won the championship?
So it was Norwich.
And Norwich, of course, yes. Yeah. I'm not really excited about Norwich. But Villa, how well do you think, a lot of their players, their best players are loany players, but do you see them, you know, rebooting and you know, being the Villa of 15 years ago?
That's the thing. It's so difficult to tell when they've done so much out of players that are on loan. I actually, with the transfer ban, I don't know what will happen, but I actually don't think it's a bad move for Tammy to stay there, and maybe that'll work out good for them. But yeah,
I'm not sure. Sorry to cut you there. I don't see the hype about Tammy Abrahams. You know,
but that's why I say it's not bad for him to stay there.
Yeah, I see a good young player, but I don't see what the hype. I mean,
the thing is, he had one good season, like one exceptional season in like the under-23s when he got 40 something goals, something like that. Everything he touched went in, but it hasn't really replicated so far. You know, you had it, Swansea, he didn't do too well.
I mean,
he
got like Swansea were doing poor that year, as I remember, anyway.
But he wasn't even getting in the team.
Okay.
I think he got like 5 goals overall. Okay. I mean, it, you know, the fact that, I mean, there were offers for him. Newcastle wanted him, I believe, this last season, and he chose to go to the Championship. Maybe, okay, he thought, well, I'll get more games. But, you'd always be surprised if he was that good. Surely a Premier League team would take. Yeah, I'm learning, George. A Premier League team would say, "We need a goal scorer. This is a young English goal scorer. We'd love to have taken him last year." We'll see how it gets on. I think either way, Villa will need to do business. But they do seem to have owners who are interested in. Who seem to be who want to put the money up? Whether they'll want to put Premier League money up, I guess we'll see.
We'll see. Overall, has it been a good season? Have you enjoyed this season? Forgetting Chelsea's ups and downs.
Forgetting
United
Chelsea.
United were just massively poor. I suppose Arsenal were Arsenal. Yeah. Liverpool, 97 points, one defeat all season. Cardiff gave it a good go. I thought they took it to the last 5 games of the season. Yeah. I thought they'd be gone by Christmas. Has the level of football you've seen this year been good? Has it been a good season for you?
I have enjoyed this season. I think Liverpool and City have carried this season. And they've been mild. And, I hate to say it, especially in Liverpool's case. But, like, you know, I think I said before, Liverpool and City, for me, are the only teams who deserve to be in the Champions League. We don't deserve it, and Tottenham don't deserve it. Yeah. Even if Tottenham did get to the final based on the Premier League performance. Yeah. Didn't they lose like 11 games or something like that?
13
games.
Yeah.
Disgrace. There's no way she gets to the
And as Arsenal, I'm thinking, yeah, that is embarrassing that they lost 13 games and you still couldn't come above them.
That's crazy.
13 games. Yeah. That's so... I know there was like one draw in there, but that's so bad.
That's so bad.
And they still got top four, but that's an indictment, I think, on Arsenal and United.
Absolutely.
Do you
absolutely.
Know what I mean?
Wolves are really good as well. I didn't really enjoy the relegation battle. I thought there was no one in there that out of like, I mean, they could have took Brighton down with them as well, just for a bonus. bring someone else up. So yeah, the relegation battle really didn't go well. You know what annoyed me most about it is Warnock. You know, they didn't get the rubber agreement against Chelsea, but they seem to have blamed that solely on their relegation.
Yeah,
as if all the batterings that they got before that
didn't matter. Didn't even happen. Listen, G, just come on the final pod of the season.
Yeah, man.
We will be back next year. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, all the usual outlets, all the socials as well, Football Fans Podcast, Twitter, Football Fans Pod. Leave us a comment. Let us know what your moment of the season was, what your goal of the season was. Did you enjoy this season? And as G and some of his cronies have been mentioning, is the cycle of England teams domination of Europe, is that back? And do you foresee some more English success in Europe next season? The Women's World Cup starts in a few days, so England, the Lionesses, have a great chance, I would suspect, of getting to the last four at the bare minimum. So maybe catch that. Copa America starts, the African Cup of Nations starts, and the transfer window and the madness that is the transfer period has started already now as well. So plenty of football to keep you all engaged over the next couple of months until we'll probably be doing the show the week before the Charity Shield. That's for your follows, subscriptions, your comments. Keep them coming in. Until next week, or until next season even. Peace.